Hello and welcome to the Mystic Cast, where you join Jack Stafford and Deborah Littleboy, members of the Etheria Society, the cosmic religion for the Aquarian Age, as we break down the barriers between religion, science, metaphysics, philosophy, mysticism, all of which are really only aspects of the self-same quest for truth. Please note, this is an independent program not produced or fact-checked by the Etheria Society. Today, our guest is Peter Sterling. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Jack. Good to be with you.
It's great to have you. Thanks for coming on.
I love all the topics that we can
checked discuss. All the boxes there, yeah?
Yeah.
Did you ever see any UFOs in your nightly wanderings?
Many times.
Really?
Yeah. You know, I was learning about Dr. King's life and how he was such an avid yoga practitioner and how that was really so instrumental in his awakening and making these cosmic connections that he had. And I too have been an avid yoga practitioner for most of my life. And before I started having many of my cosmic experiences, that the yoga practices were instrumental for me as well in just preparing, purifying, and refining my nervous system to prepare me for what we would call our divine dispensation.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the blessing upon me and for my life's work and mission.
What kind of practices did you do, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, you know, of course, yoga, sauna, and of course, the pranayama, the breathing techniques of pranayama, and learning breath control has been very important for accessing these higher states of consciousness.
Mm.
Moving in yoga, they would call it samadhi, you know, and going into higher samadhi states. And there's different levels of samadhi in my understanding and experience. So as I wrote about in my book, in my early experiences here, I had many kind of samadhi type experiences that opened me up to very powerful energies and influences in my life.
Yeah, I was reading about your life story and, you know, the intensive 3-year period where you lived in your van in Sedona in the park and mm-hmm. really right close to nature. And that must really have tuned you in. And
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was in the canyons here in Sedona where I live now. And, you know, when I came here in the late 80s, I had already been very spiritually attuned, even as a young child. My grandmother was a mystic and she was a soul traveler. And she was very adept at Ekankar, which is the ancient science of soul travel, using a mantra, a hue, the hue sound frequency, that when you meditate with that and tune into that, it connects you with the inner light and sound. And so my grandmother was very adept at this. And as a young child, she would tell me about her soul travel experiences into the higher planes, into the higher spiritual planes. And she would just tell me the most amazing stories. And she would tell me she would hear the angels singing to her all day long. And she was very attuned to that. And then, okay. You know, as I got older and became a teenager and started going through the change, and I started to ask more questions. And that's when she actually started giving me more formal teachings and passing down her library of books about and workbooks with the actual meditation and soul travel techniques.
Okay.
This has been, you know, kind of like my destiny and in my lineage.
Your lineage, yeah. So is astral projection?
Yes, I learned astral projection and out-of-body experience. I first learned it with my grandmother and learning the teachings of Ekankar. And then as I got older into my 20s and became more of a metaphysical researcher and explorer, of metaphysics and the paranormal, that I got turned on to the teachings of Robert Monroe and the Monroe Institute.
Okay, yeah.
And started practicing some of his techniques. So I had my first out-of-body experiences actually as a young child. And I wrote about this in my book because I was diagnosed as hyperactivity disorder as a young boy at 9-10 years old. And then I was prescribed, put on Ritalin, you know, which is still.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't need it. That wasn't the issue with me, but they gave it to me anyway. And that was that had almost like a hallucinogenic effect because it's a psychotropic drug on the mind. Right. So I would take this Ritalin, and I was sitting in my class in sixth grade in the classroom with all the other kids at their desks. And all of a sudden, I start to disassociate from my physical body, and I start floating out of my body in class. It was quite terrifying, actually, and scary as a young child because I didn't really know what was happening.
Yeah.
So it started for me. You know, I've been an explorer of, alternate dimensions of being since I was a kid.
Yeah, well, you're an old soul, and I mean, that's what they would say.
That's what
probably
they say.
So do you go to the other realms? Can you leave?
Well, I did a lot of that. Nowadays, I'm much more grounded because, I have a 12-year-old boy who's in the other room right now. And so I have a lot of earthbound responsibilities. So I'm not venturing outside of my body too much these days, although I always have like a level of multidimensional awareness because I access these different parts of myself and I'm very much in touch with them. So I have very much a multidimensional state of awareness that, and living here in Sedona, the environment here really encourages and facilitates that type of
awareness.
Because the energy and the community of people and, you know, so many people that are here in our community are accessing these levels of awareness. And of course, together, as we all connect within the unified field here, it really collectively we're opening up portals here into multidimensional realities. And that's really what Sedona is about.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some pictures here.
This is on the right-hand side, that's the subway there. That's one of the most popular spots in Boynton Canyon, the subway. Yeah.
So you know these areas very well, yeah.
Well, this is, you see these canyons here, this is where I retreated to when I first came to Sedona in the late 80s. And my inner spiritual guidance told me that I was to retreat into these ancient canyons.
Wow.
And you'll see, you hear kind of on the left-hand side, second picture down, that's Boynton Canyon there, one over, it says Canyons and Arches. Yeah, right there. This canyon I spent a lot of time in this place, and I would hike out into this canyon, hike up on some of the ridges overlooking the panorama. It's just breathtaking, but there's an energy there, and there's also a tremendous tranquility and specifically an extraordinary silence, a quality of silence is in these canyons. And my guidance was that I was to sit in the silence. I was told, just sit and become present, you know, be still and know that I am God. And so I retreated into these canyons and just would spend hours just immersing myself in the profound silence there and listening to the sounds of the inner planes. And so it was through doing that where I began to hear the sounds of music, just like my grandmother had told me when I was a young child. All of a sudden now I was having my own mystical experience in this way. And when I got absolutely still and silent and listened, I began to hear the very subtle strains of some sort of music. And at first I thought it was somebody was out in the forest with me with a portable stereo playing symphonic classical music, and I was floating on the wind from somewhere in the distance. But then I realized that's not what this is, that I'm tapping into something of a divine origin. And so when I hooked into it and just acknowledged that this is what it was, then it became louder, and I became closer to it and became louder, to where ultimately it was like full, you know, high definition holographic sound coming from everywhere. I was fully immersed in it. It was the sound of the angels. It was the angelic choirs. And the sound was like nothing I had ever heard before. It was the most beautiful sound I had ever heard. And it was so pure. There was a purity to it. And there was so much divinity within it. And the feeling of love and oneness that it affected me at such an, it touched the deepest part of my heart and soul. And sitting out in the wilderness, all of a sudden I began to like tremble and quake. And it was like I had, in the yoga tradition, it would be known as like a Kundalini experience, where the,
yeah,
the Kundalini Shakti energy moves through the chakras. So I had this like full chakra experience, and my heart just blasted open, and my mind and my crown chakra opened up. And then through that, I was taken up the central pillar of light. So in yoga, they speak of Sushumna, right? And in yoga, they speak of the seven chakras. Well, these are just our earth-based chakras. We have several other chakras that are outside the body. So all of a sudden, you know, like in the Bible, they talk about the seventh seal, the opening of the seventh seal. Well, it's like my seventh chakra, crown chakra, opened up, and I was really able to travel up that central pillar of light and connect with my my divine self, my higher self, my Christ self, my ascended Christ self. There's different names for it, you know, but I traveled up, I was taken up, and then I was just in the golden light. I was being bathed in golden light, hearing the most beautiful celestial angelic tone. And it was quite extraordinary. And so this happened on multiple occasions, but ultimately what happened, I was taken up into the golden light, listening to this glorious sound. And then my inner guidance, like my spirit guides or my higher self, was guiding me to learn how to see in the inner planes, because you're not using your physical eyes, you're using your third eye, and so when I adjusted the focus and got the aperture right on my inner vision, then all of a sudden, there was this definition to what I was seeing, and to my astonishment, I was surrounded by a group of angels, and they were the cherubs, the little ones that were playing harps.
Playing the harp, the classic stereotypical.
Yeah, just like we see depicted on the classical Renaissance art by the great artists like Michelangelo.
But also the yogis in like in yoga autobiography of a yogi, there was it's mentioned there as well. And they mentioned
Yogananda was a big influence for me in that book, Autobiography of a Yogi. So so then they appeared to me, and they were playing harps and flutes and violins, just like we see in the classical art. And in my research and studies, I have found that those artists as well were visited upon by the angels as well, because their consciousness was open and they were looking up into the higher planes for their inspiration. And great composers and great literature. There's so many stories of the angelic influence. You know, so that's what happened to me. They appeared to me. And then when I saw them, and at first I thought, this can't be real. Like, I thought I was making it up. It must be some sort of hallucination or a mind fantasy of some sort. And I would kind of come back in my body, look around, get my bearings, and like then go back into meditation and go back up into the light. And there they were. And and then I could start to hear them. I could hear them talking amongst themselves, but they weren't talking, moving their lips. They were just talking in pure telepathy. And in my mind, I could hear them, and they were saying like, oh, look at him. Do you think he can see us? Do you think he can hear us? And I could hear them in my mind. And I thought back to them. I said, yes, I can see you and I can hear you. Can you hear me? And then once we realized that we had this circuit of communication, they got very excited about that. And they started to fly around very quickly. And it's like a little celebration broke out, because what they had communicated to me, it was not every day where the angels make contact like this with a human mortal in this dimension. And this was, of course, as I've learned, this was my destiny of my life, was for this to happen, because of what they were going to give to me and the work we were going to do together, and that we had set a plan to meet at this time. And so once I realized that this was true and really happening, and I went on many journeys with them, which I write about in great detail in my book, Hearing the Angels Sing. But they took me many places to show me many different things within the higher planes. And I would fly with them. It was amazing. Amazing experience. And but they showed me many things. Ultimately, where they took me, Jack, was a place where at first I was surrounded in darkness, and they were with me. I'm seeing this in my inner mind's eye. And then looking at, they told me, they said, look up here. And I looked up into the vastness of this dark space, and there was a single star shining brightly, like looking up at the planet Venus or Sirius in the sky, just this beautiful star. And then all of a sudden, we started to move towards it. I felt myself pulled towards it. And as a group, we all moved forward and began to get bigger and bigger and bigger, to all of a sudden, I was overcome with this huge luminous sphere of golden light. It was like a ball of golden light, and it was a sun. It was a huge sun, and it was pulsating pure love. And the light was just, at first it was kind of intense. I often say it was like the light of 1,000 suns. But then as I relaxed into it, like they were guiding me, just relax and let go. And when I did that, then I was overcome with the most extraordinary feeling of bliss, of ecstasy, of divine ecstasy, as this golden light and the energy of pure love, of pure divinity, of pure divine love was just bathing me, Jack. And it was like all of the sorrows and pain, anguish of all of my lifetimes and incarnations was just purified and washed away by this light of divine. And my life changed. In that moment, I was not the same person. And I became one with this light. And from that experience, the angels communicated to me that my mission that I was asking to be revealed to me was to be a channel for this heavenly sound, and that I was to play the harp, and that working together as a team with my angelic team, we would bring a very special music to Earth at this time of the dawning of the golden age, of the ascension. And they said that this music has within it the vibrations and the frequencies of pure divine love of the Godhead. You know, when they showed me, when I saw the luminous sphere of light, the angels told me, they said, this is God. This is it. This is the wellspring. This is the source of all love and light in the universe. You know, and as I focused at it, then I could see also, Jack, that there was something around it. And when I adjusted my vision and came into focus, I could see the multitudes of angels of all different shapes and sizes around this luminous sphere of light, kind of spiraling into eternity, in this eternal landscape of this divine celestial sphere of where this love is. And they said, this is it. This is the source. This is the Godhead. This is the wellspring of it all. And that's why many people that have had near-death experiences report seeing a ball of golden light. It's very common. That's pulsating pure love. And you just feel this love like you've never felt it. And it just unifies everything. And it's at that time where my DNA just changed. Like I tapped into that source of oneness, of divinity. And it changed me at a very core level of my being. And I could see the angels spiraling around it. It was just an incredible panorama. So that's the source of, they said that you're to play this music and be a channel. And that I'm basically the ground crew. I feel a kind of a simpatico with Dr. King, because he had a similar experience where he was part of the ground crew working.
Ground crew is a good way to say it. Yeah, yeah.
That's how it was for me. And, you know, this was my mission. They explained that there's others they are working with, but this is your mission. We'll work as a team. We'll teach you how to play. And together we'll bring this special music, and it's going to bring healing and awakening and upliftment and raise the vibration for this time of the ascension.
Wow. These are kind of experiences that words are very inadequate now. It's why you do music, I guess.
It is, you know, and it is a beyond words experience. But part of my work and my mission is to be able to translate that into the music, but also through my words too, because I speak and I do interviews and public speaking about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I've had to refine my languaging and using a way to put words together to convey these higher meanings and these concepts of the heavenly worlds. And it's a beautiful thing. You know, I don't really, there's this link I have with it, and it's refined and changed me in a way where I'm just kind of like a channel, like a mouthpiece for it. It just comes through. It's just a channeling, basically.
Yeah.
Like Dr. King did.
Yeah, well, I mean, you did in Sedona in a beautiful nature. He had to do it in London in the 1950s. Like,
right.
You know, imagine doing 8 hours yoga a day and a day job.
Well, that's amazing when I learned that, because I had read many of the autobiographies of the great yogis and teachers like Yogananda or Swami Muktananda or others. And they too would meditate oftentimes for 8 or 10 hours a day. And they often went into a stone hut in India in the forest. And, you know, well, here in the West, we, in our culture, we don't really have the opportunity to do that so much because our life is too full and fast. So, but that was amazing when I learned that about him, that he was so dedicated to the work.
Yeah, and then once he'd achieved those states of samadhi, you know, he could raise the kundalini up and down at will, and you know, stay in those ecstatic states. But he said that at his highest peak, he not became a one with the Mother Earth, but communicated with the Mother Earth and felt her sadness and her suffering. Yeah. You know, because she's a great being, a great Mahabindu, Mahabuddha, many lives more evolved than us, and she's living in sacrifice so that we can go through experience. And so he came out of that, and he lived the rest of his life in service, did all these cosmic missions, you know, being the ground crew. And literally, he projected into the astral realms. And he was part of the one of the six adepts who transmuted Satan and the dark forces. So he was kind of a Jedi as well, because these masters always come with a, like Jesus, he came to die at a specific time.
Yeah.
But he also did teaching. It was kind of a side gig, really. And so the master, George King, he did many things, but his main mission was to do the, to take on the indirect combat in the apocalypse. So he was kind of one of the few interplanetary masters trained in combat. So it was a very dark side to it. And it's not really very well publicized, but that was his main mission as well.
So he was trained in the spiritual combat. And I've had some of these experiences myself. It's pretty heavy. It's a pretty heavy mission, you know?
Well, I mean, he was trained. He's a Martian. So he incarnated. He had many lives of training before, and so that all came in handy when he was but have you been into the lowest of the astral realms or in your projection?
Yeah, I had some experience where I had some experiences in the lower astral worlds that were quite terrifying, actually. But it was shown to me that it was through those experiences, when I came out of them, that I felt a great empowerment too. And it was necessary for me. The way it was explained to me, Jack, was that it was necessary for me to go there to have an experience so that I could know without a doubt that these planes are real and they really exist. As much as the heavenly planes, there are the lower planes where you know, we encounter all sorts of demonic and just weird, grotesque forms and beings, and then seeing just, you know, it's like the place of nightmares almost.
Yeah, because you've talking a lot about the light. You went up to the top, but the dregs in the bottom, it's as above as below.
Well, this is archetypal. It's like what Jesus had to do. He had to go to the desert for 40 days and fast and be in the silence of the desert. And that's when he encountered, you know, Satan or the devil, and which in a sense could be just like our own shadow self. You know, it's like this shadow work we have to do. And there's great empowerment. A lot of people don't want to do the shadow work, you know, really looking in the mirror of oneself and seeing our own lower aspects that need to be refined and purified so that we can attain the higher levels, you know. So it's a deep, powerful work. And out of that comes great spiritual strength and power.
I think when Jesus said he was talking about get thee behind me, Satan, I think he was also referring to the Kundalini. I've heard that said. Because if you raise it through the front of the body, you can use it in bad ways. But get behind me is raise it up Shushumna. But he definitely was tempted by also there were the dark forces there who wanted him to, come onto their team. But
right. I had an experience like that too that I wrote about in my book. My book is called Hearing the Angels Sing, A True Story of Angelic Assistance. But, you know, I don't know what it was like for Dr. King, but for me, like once, you know, I started playing the harp and it started coming through very quickly. And I realized that through playing the harp, which is the most magical instrument on the world throughout great antiquity, the harp has powers with it. Is a magical instrument. So I realized that through my playing, I could enchant people. Sound, and I could almost cast a spell of enchantment on people.
Wow.
And if I wanted to, I could do that for my own selfish purposes. Right? Maybe I wanted wealth, or fame, or women, or whatever I wanted to, right? And I started to realize that. And I started to kind of, in a sense, test that to see. And then the angels took my harp away from me through a terrible fire where in my Volkswagen van, I write about it in the book, where I had a fuel leak all of a sudden out in northern New Mexico in Taos in the middle of nowhere, and my van caught on fire. And within moments, it was engulfed in flames, and I had my harp inside the car, and it burned, and it was taken away from me. And I realized why it had happened. And so I had to go through a whole nother level of purification and prayer and really reflection of what I was doing and recommit to the mission and take more vows of dedication to it. And then the harp came back into my life. But there was there was 6 months went by, and I thought I might not even play again. Like they told me, they said, as easily as it was given to you, this can be taken away from you.
You have tough teachers,
They're tough. Oh yeah. I mean, this is like Ascended Master, Angelic Hierarchy, Galactic Federation. Yeah. They don't mess around, you know?
Yeah.
So it's serious work. Yeah.
Yeah. But you've been down to like 20 cents in your pocket and a bag of rice.
It's true. That was about just seeing how low I could go to trust that. Because back in those days, I really lived by the axiom, you know, seek ye first the kingdom, heaven, and the rest shall be given unto thee. And I believe that just pursue your spiritual path and the riches of the world will be given to you just by default, you know, there's nothing you have to do. But then I realized that wasn't completely accurate. And there were times where I tested it, you know, to the umpteenth. And sometimes I would be hungry. I'd go to bed hungry, you know. So I learned some lessons during that time. Now I advise people, when you start to have these experiences, you're on your spiritual path, don't give up your day job. Until your night job pays, you know?
Well, I mean, Dr. King, once he received the command from Interplanetary Parliament, he was made the voice of Interplanetary Parliament. Then he was made to give away all his possessions. You know, he had accumulated quite a nice he worked hard, you know, he had a good, so he had to give it all away and he had to go to America with just the shirt on his back, basically. But he always had enough money for every mission, and there was always somehow, you know, he just scraped through. But also in the end, he said exactly what you're saying as well, that because he relied on donations from people, and if those people in the society hadn't had day jobs, you know, we needed a boat to go out to, you know, Santa Barbara is where you were born, yeah? It's a great cycle.
I was born in Santa Monica, just down the highway.
Okay.
But I've lived in Santa Barbara. I know the place well.
Okay, well, there's a great psychic center off the coast there, and it was due, the San Andreas Fault was due to go. You know, scientists don't know why it hasn't gone, but it was because Dr. King went out there in a boat and radiated, he's trailed behind a radionic device where the battery and the radio energy was put through him, and he drove in this special pattern. And if he hadn't done that, then, you know, San Francisco would be under about 3 miles of water. So, you know, and if we hadn't had the money to buy the boat, you know, you can wish all you want, you know, but it's like you're doing. It's, you've got to go to the gigs. You've got to make the CDs. You've got to do the work. Nobody's going to do that for you. Yeah.
You got to take care of your 3D experience. And I just didn't want to work. I just wanted to do my spiritual work of the music, and I gave everything else up. And now, of course, it's different, but in the early days. So that's why I advise don't give up your day job. But I too, I write about this in my book too. I went through an experience where I gave away all my possessions, and I was told to just give it all away, and because a new life is coming, and I too had to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'd be surprised how much you can live on. A lot of it's just, and what do the Chinese? What do the Chinese say? They're saying that anything more than you need is poison.
Well, there was something about the simplicity of that those days. Of course, you know, when you live in a van, you can't really have many possessions. You really have to narrow it down.
That's a good way to limit it. Get a small van.
But now I'm a householder, and I own my own home, and I have.
Yeah.
All of my stuff that I have now to do my work, because I have my own recording studio here that I'm talking to you now from, and all of my instruments. And I'm also a visual artist, so I make paintings, which I call portals of light.
Is that one behind you, yours?
Well, this is one of my photographs here. I'm a photographer.
Wow.
So this is one of my landscape photos here in Sedona. These are called Sedona Crystal Visions, and I coat them with quartz crystal powder. So all my work has a layer of quartz crystal on it. It's quite unique. And so I do, you know, I do a lot of different things. I'm an entrepreneur. So, you know, keeps me occupied while I'm here.
So what is your next mission? What are you trying to achieve in the time you have left?
Well, what I'm working on now is I'm just working on my 17th album of harp music that came through in a channeling over Thanksgiving. I received the title of the album about 2 weeks before. They told me that the album would be called Heaven Sent. And then a day after Thanksgiving, I was guided by the angels to prepare to receive a transmission. So I set up my microphones and was out in my big room remotely out there. And like I'd never done, because they wanted me to capture a different quality of sound. And then when I got everything in place, I just started playing. And that day I received about at least 10 compositions. And that's what I'm working on now. It just came through in one day, and it's coming together very quickly. So the next album we're working on. I also recently released my children's book called Peter and the Magic Harp. And the first version is released on YouTube as a YouTube video. And it's a wonderful story of a boy named Peter who went into the forest and heard the angelic music and started to play the harp. And so that I'm doing, that just came out recently. And then the published version of the children's book I'm working on. And then I also have an oracle deck called the Portals of Light Oracle Deck, which is 64 cards with 64 of my Portals of Light images with 64 essays, one for each card, that's in the works right now too. So got a few different things going. And I also do my my land journeys here. I have a tour company called Sedona Sacred Land Journeys, and where I take people out into the backcountry here and take them to the places where I heard and met the angels for the first time and helped to facilitate these type of rendezvous for my clients.
Wow. Gosh. Yeah. I feel really drawn to Sedona. I've seen all the pictures now. I'll definitely have to come and take one of your tours one day.
Got to come and check it out. I'll take you out.
Oh, thanks, Peter. That'd be wonderful.
For sure.
So where can people learn more about you then? On what is your website?
Well, the website is HarpMagic, HARPMAGIC.com, HarpMagic. And when you get there, all of my links are there for all of my social media and YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and all of that is there. Yeah, so please come and check it out. Have a listen to the samples. There's some videos right on the homepage. And I've been winning a lot of awards from around the world over the last few years. It's been very exciting, the recognition that the work's been getting.
Yeah, you're doing so well. Have you ever been to Lake Powell?
You know, I never have been to Lake Powell.
Because that's one of the most...
It's not too far from here.
No, 169 miles north.
Yeah, what about it?
That's where one of the most sacred sites on in the planet. That's where... The Aetherius Society goes to release energy into the psychic center.
You still do?
Yeah, they still do, yeah.
Go on boats?
Yeah.
I would love to go on an expedition with you guys sometime.
Yeah, well, to go on a mission, you have to be on the mission team, team mission. So
now
you
tell me and the listeners how people can get involved in your work.
Well, you join the Aetherius Society. And then you have to go into the Special Missions Task Force. You have to go through, you know, initiations, and I'm not exactly sure. You have to be a member for a certain time. You have to take I think if you just volunteer enough time, there's not a specific skill set, because then there's not a lot of people doing it. So it could be something everyone could. It's just a matter of time, you know, learning and. Going through the temple degree as well. But they go on the boat there, and then they release. So they charge the battery, and then they release it into the psychic center of the earth. So we give something back to the Mother Earth, because not many people, you know, even ask permission before they build their own house. Mm-hmm. You know, not many people thank the Mother Earth every day for everything she gives us. You know, she's the greatest, the most holy, the most spiritual being you've ever physically touched. You know, she's a living, breathing goddess, much more, many millions of lives more evolved than us. So as one of his missions, Dr. King charged up the 19 holy mountains. This is energy intended for the humanity. But we take some of the energy and we give it to the Mother Earth. Sorry, my voice is going here.
No worries. I've been doing that work by planting crystals all over different places in the world that I've been.
Oh, wow.
Infused with prayer. I was guided to do this in order to activate the crystal grid of the planet for the ascension.
Oh, there you go. Well, I see you're on the same path.
It feels very, very, very aligned.
Yes, yeah. Apparently, it's one of the most magical experiences if you go to Lake Powell when it's a full moon, or is it a new moon? But apparently, he spends 3 nights there. It's supposed to be incredible. Yeah,
I imagine it is. I'm going to have to do that now.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, I think we have to hang up before my voice goes.
Okay.
It's been great chatting to you. Really good. And we'll catch you further down the line.
The Aetherius Society.
Yep. Aetherius
Society. I'm going to look into it, and hopefully we can meet again.
That'd be wonderful. Okay. All right, Peter. Great chatting to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.